That's right. We're back. All About Home Construction. Give us a call, 262-1567. We're live right here in the studio with Mr. Harry Yates of Yates Landscaping. And we're talking about trees, hemlocks, and things like that. You know, that's an interesting concept. If you think about it, what size tree, what kind of tree, you know, how do we go about deciding, you know, what do we want or where do we want it?
Landscapers can of course give advice on your foundation plants that of course are close to the house foundation landscape, and then the windbreaks, as we've discussed, your lawn trees with shade, flowering, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, you know, one problem that I've seen out there over the years in remodeling stuff is people planting trees too close to their home. You know, code wants us to be 8 inches away from the side. And, you know, now we're seeing people mulch all the way up against their side. Now, a lot of this mulch, I know, you know, it comes from sawmills and debarker, and which the reason they debark is to save, Terry, you know this,
right,
to save the blade on their,
sure,
band mill or their sawmill. But will the acids in the mulch and stuff actually deter some insects?
Yes, they will. And as you said, with the mulch, you need to stay a few inches away from any wood siding, et cetera. Mulch goes through a decomposition process, and that heat is in itself will kill a lot of the insects.
What about adverse seeds and stuff like that? Would it do that?
Yes, it will.
And because termites are getting to become something that is in the mountains now.
Sure.
You know, I would have never thought I'd seen it, but with climate change and stuff like that, we actually had a barn that was eat up with termites.
Mulch is extremely important, of course, for water retention. It helps the water in the soil, and also it keeps the soil temperature cooler. And that's important, particularly with plants that you might get from a nursery or a garden center off the mountain, which will do okay here. What you have to be concerned about is the soil temperature, and mulch is a big factor there.
Go ahead, Terry. One thing I've been looking up to is, you know, talking about my vegetable garden, is doing some of this no-till thing, you know, where you just pile in lots of mulch, and then, you know, each year after year, you're just adding layers and layers of mulch, so you don't have to break the ground every time. And that's obviously to keep down the weeds, but also I think some of the side benefits is, like you were mentioning, where you got looser ground underneath, so the roots don't have to do as much work. And also, you don't have to water it quite as much because the mulch is kind of holding some of that water in, keeping it from evaporating.
That's correct. And water retention is extremely important for mulch. I mean, for plants, and that's one of the main purposes of mulch. And of course, you have the aesthetic value of it too.
Sure.
Well, you know, over the years, we're seeing brick dust, lava rock, mm-hmm, things like that. More
and all the rubber products, you're seeing a lot more of that, I believe.
Matter of fact, it's a shame that in Concord, North Carolina, they have a plant that grinds tires.
That's a business I always wanted to get into.
And we're allowed to use ground up tires as gravel in backfills of foundation.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and I didn't either until a few years ago, but it just would cost so much to bring a tandem load up here to go around the foundation.
Right.
But, you know, a lot of homeowners don't think about matting underneath their mulch. You know, what do you think about that?
I'm not a proponent of the matting because it inhibits some of the water flow, and it also will build up soil temperature. Weeds, obviously, are a problem in a landscape, and we don't use any netting or matting ourselves underneath underneath the mulch.
What about chemicals that a homeowner could use, or which, you know, there's people don't realize that the same chemicals that you buy, I can't get, you know, because of a licensing issue. What it would be the most effective that they could do for spraying, you know, for weeds and stuff?
Ultrafine oil or horticultural oil is very good on aphids and mites as well. A lot of the pesticides, of course, you have to be licensed to buy and or apply. So you need to consult a landscaper or somebody in that profession as far as the insect control. And you have a lot of different insects, so different pesticides will control different insects.
Yeah, one will kill bees, one won't.
That's correct.
And actually, guys, we got a caller. We'll go ahead and take that real fast. Good morning, caller. Who are we talking with? Oh, caller, you there?
Pardon?
Oh, good morning. How are you?
Doing okay. Doing well. Good. Thank you.
Who are we speaking with?
This is Paul.
Hey, Paul. What's your question this morning?
Got a lot of weeds in my grass. When's the best time and what kind of weed control thing would be best to apply? It's a lot of that little, what I call Charlie grass, a creeping vine with a little round bud on it.
This spring is your best time to try to control that, and they have a lot of products on the market. The Weed and Feed, which will also feed your grass as well as control most weeds.
Just that Weed and Feed that you can get at the local stores would be as good as anything.
That's correct. And
pellets rather than the spray type.
Yes, and of course you have to pay attention to the weather, so that what you put on doesn't get washed off. It needs to dry. And
okay, so you need to dry a day or two.
Yes, that's correct. And
okay. All righty. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Paul. Appreciate you calling.
Thank you for calling.
Bye-bye.
So how would you go about spreading that? I mean, you just broadcast by hand or you know, I mean, I guess you got to worry about putting too much on or not enough. How would you go about that?
Exactly. Need to calibrate your equipment that you're using. And most people use a small rotary type spreader, right. And you need to calibrate that to get the amount of product, active ingredient of the product per square foot or per 1,000 square feet.
I think, you know, I have a big problem with that, like with fertilizer, for instance, or in this case, a pesticide or trying to kill off the weeds. You know, it feels like I'm standing there, I'm spinning the wheel, and I'm not really sure if it's going down or right, you know, if it's going to the right place and that kind of thing. How do you go about, you know, doing that, or is that just kind of experience?
Good question about the fertilizer. The phosphate, which is the middle number of fertilizer, is extremely important. Phosphate develops root growth, bud set on rhododendron and azaleas, et cetera, et cetera. Your basic rule of thumb on an established plant is 1 ounce of actual nitrogen per plant per year. And as an example, if you were using 20-20-20 fertilizer, that would be 5 ounces per plant, 5 ounces of actual product. On establishment of plants, then you would cut that in half the first year.
Okay. Like a 10-10-10?
You would cut the usage rate. A lot of people over-fertilize, and, you know, basically 1 ounce of actual nitrogen is all that plant needs in a year's time.
Okay.
You can split that application. You can put 3/4 of that on the spring, 1/4 in the fall. Once you get your soil where you want it with the phosphate potash, then basically plants need just nitrogen.
Okay. You know, going back to the fertilizers, first I want to say, Paul, thanks for the call. If you have a call yourself, 262-1567, we'd love to get the next caller on the air. But Harry, going back to the fertilizer, how do we choose? I mean, you see these numbers, 10, 10, 10, 20, 20, 20, 10, 15, 20. You know, what does that mean? I mean, obviously, each part is a different compound. How do we choose the right fertilizer?
Your first number is, of course, nitrogen. Second number is the phosphate. And the third number is your potash, which plants need. And there are also a lot of other micronutrients that plants have. It really doesn't matter. As I said, you have to use the 1 ounce rate. And if you were using 10, 10, 10, that would be 10 ounces. If you were using 20, 20, 20, you would use 5 ounces. There are also some good slow-release fertilizers on the market. Southern Ag, as an example, has a 14, 14, 14 slow-release that's
good for wet times and dry times.
Yeah, exactly, and it's reasonably priced. So you get the release of nitrogen over a period of time rather than a one-shot deal.
You're talking about wet, obviously. When do I want to apply fertilizer? A dry day, a wet day, spring, fall? When's the best time? When would you
morning,
come in?
Morning, afternoon.
Yeah.
Spring, of course, is your best time, and right now is a good time to fertilize your plants, and also your evergreens, deciduous trees need lime. Lime is extremely important to evergreens, hemlock, spruce, etc., as well as your deciduous trees. You got to stay away from the lime on your rhododendron azaleas.
They're acidic plants.
Exactly, they don't like the lime, but. Lime is really more important to evergreens than fertilizer is.
Do you see with the soil here in the mountains that, you know, we need more lime than we would, say, off the mountain?
Exactly, and also the phosphate level here in the mountains in almost all places is very, very low.
Right.
And extremely important phosphate is to root growth.
Guys, we actually have another caller. Good morning, caller. Who are we speaking with?
Good morning. This is David. I have a question about lawn care. What should you bag your lawn clippings or mulch or just let them shoot out, you know, out of the lawnmower as is when you're cutting your lawn?
I think it's a good idea to mulch them if you have a mulching mower. Of course, this spring, if you fertilize and lime your lawn, then you're going to get that very prolific flush, so you may need to bag at that time. But mulching those clippings, it is good for the soil.
It just returns it right back to it.
That's correct.
And the lawn grass.
You're taking my call.
Thank you, Dave.
Thanks,
David.
Appreciate
that. Lawn grass deteriorates so much faster than regular full hay, you know.
Right. Well, you know, and you see that, I mean, with animals. I've got chickens and things, goats. You kind of read about people trying to feed grass clippings as hay, but it's really a little bit of a different process, the way it breaks down and the way the water and the moisture kind of affects it. You got mold versus, you know, not molding.
Yes.
You're talking about hay versus grass clippings.
One thing on fertilizer that most people probably don't realize, that the nitrogen base in the fertilizer that you buy today is actually made out of crude oil.
Okay.
And the phosphate and the potash, believe it or not, a lot of it is mined right here in the state of North Carolina.
I didn't know that.
Yep.
Didn't know that.
One of the largest phosphate plants in the United States is here in North Carolina.
That's good.
Phosphate moves very, very slow into the soil. And if you're planting plants, then you need to mix some actual phosphate, no nitrogen, no potash, but some actual phosphate into your backfill mix. And, again, that will help the root growth with your plant.
Well, being a farmer, you know, there's definitely, and you, Terry, yourself with your animals and stuff, you know you can't over-fertilize.
Right.
And, you know, I use the three main grasses, Timothy, orchard grass, and fescue. You know, Timothy and orchard grass come on in the spring. You know, fescue will grow all winter when it gets warm. But then we have a lot of white clover.
Right.
White clover introduces nitrogen naturally to the ground itself. So.
You know, and that's the thing. And you can do that with grasses, but you can also do it with other plants as well, where they kind of complement each other. One puts off nitrogen or pulls out more of this than the other.
Christmas trees, where you have the clover, and the white clover, is as Randy mentioned, is native to this area. And a lot of farmers have sown white clover in their fields. Gives you about 1/4 of the nitrogen requirement that you would need on the 1 ounce we talked about earlier, just by the white clover itself.
So growing, yeah.
That cuts down on the amount of nitrogen that you would use in the fields there.
It's kind of interesting. I knew it helped some, but I didn't realize exactly how.
Well, yeah, we got white clover in the fields, and we have red clover in the hay fields in the meadows. So
there you go. Working on it, Randy.
Hey,
keep it up. You don't have to buy fertilizer.
White clover also great for the bees. Again, soil temperature, erosion. It's a great ground cover.
Well, you know, and that goes to prove they have different aspects. You know, different properties they can apply to. Listen, we're going to take one more break. You listen all about home construction right here on AM 1450 WATA. Give us a call 262-1567.